This show is for college recruiting fans.
What a run! He's got a lane! Wow! Touchdown! What an athlete!
The inside story on the Ducks, the Beavers, the national recruiting scene, and high school prospects across Oregon and Southwest Washington. This is Recruiting with Andrew Nemec, the Oregon Live and Oregonian recruiting expert players, coaches, and fans follow.
Ooh-wee.
Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan.
Hello and welcome to Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan. I've been asked this year quite a bit, how is it this year that Oregon has what is now the number two recruiting class in the nation in football, behind only Alabama? And I did a podcast recently. Jeremy Crabtree, formerly of ESPN, had me on it and said, what is that about? And I thought it was interesting enough, I wanted to bring it here. And I think it's really important when we go back to the glory days of Oregon football. Joey Harrington, Dennis Dixon, Marcus Mariota, with Chip Kelly. Chip Kelly hated recruiting. Chip Kelly despised recruiting. Marcus Greaves, the former Oregon State running back, is my new producer. Mike Lynch actually filling in for him today. But Marcus went on a visit to Oregon. As a sophomore, he was a big-time prospect. Big-time prospect. And he visited and talked about going in the Oregon locker room. And Oregon wanted to sell you kind of their flash without some of the other stuff. Chip Kelly didn't want to build those personal relationships a ton. He liked the idea of watching a kid's film and going, this is how I'm going to use this guy in the offense. I love this. He could do that all day. But getting to know the kid, schmoozing the kid, no interest in that. So Chip Kelly takes the four or five kids that were on a visit in the locker room, and all but Marcus commit on the spot in the locker room. They're ready. We want to be Ducks. We love it. Marcus doesn't. He wants to talk it over with his parents. So Chip kind of pulls him aside and is like, hey, what's the deal? And he's like, you know, coach, I just want to talk it over with my parents. I just want to feel it out. I want the excitement to go by. I want to figure out what's going on with the academics. And Chip Kelly just flips the switch and says, well, I can get 15 or 20 guys just like you on the West Coast. Don't worry about it. Never mind. And that was it, which makes for an awful rest of the visit for Marcus. But you have to understand that for a long time there, Oregon was producing on the field without that recruiting pizzazz. Yes, they had the flash. Yes, they had the uniforms. They had the results. But they didn't have really good recruiters. And in an era where recruiting started to be a bigger thing on social media, people started building hype. You started, you know, seeing guys get thousands of followers. Now these guys have verified Twitter accounts. Oregon was very secretive about who they were visiting, who they were targeting. Chip Kelly, towards the end, was in an era where Oregon State coaches even would tweet a map on Thursday nights, Friday mornings, with a pin in every city the staff was going to be in. They wanted you to know. They were trying to build hype. We're going to be in Palo Alto. We're going to be in El Paso. We're going to be in Carson City. We're going to be in Salem. They wanted you to know because they wanted those kids to go, man, Oregon State's coming to my game. Retweet. Build the hype. Build the relationship. It works in multiple ways. Oregon didn't want anybody to know. Oregon didn't want anybody to know. And it started to be a situation where there was a gap between what Oregon's previous staff understood was the way recruiting worked and what kids actually liked. And for a long time, Oregon's staff was together. They were together 15, 20 years. And on the field, that was great. That was part of the reason they were so successful. But on the recruiting trail, no influencer in that room sat down and said, guys, we're not recruiting right anymore. This is how guys recruit now. Kids like this kind of thing. Nobody in that room would change it. Chip Kelly was the leader on the field, the unquestioned leader on the field. But with recruiting, nobody really knew. Nobody really knew that there was becoming a sizable gap in the way Oregon approached recruiting and USC, even Oregon State. Then Mark Helfrich takes over. And Mark Helfrich just basically tried to do a replica, a rough draft of Chip Kelly. Indifference to recruiting, we run our system, you'd be lucky to be a part of things. And you don't necessarily say that, but that's the attitude. You should want to come here. We shouldn't have to sell you. We'll offer you the scholarship, but you should want to come here. And if there's anything kids don't like in recruiting, it's one, not being pursued, and two, a lack of being genuine. And Mark Helfrich wasn't himself. He was doing a Chip Kelly replica, and a bad one at that. And I talk about this all the time, and Oregon fan, I know you hate this conversation piece, but it really matters, and it tells you everything you need to know. It used to be, a long time ago, you didn't necessarily offer a quarterback until he was a proven entity, which meant potentially between his junior and senior year in high school. So that's the approach Oregon took with Tua Tagovailoa. Well, Tua, as a sophomore, said, I worked out with Marcus when I was in the third grade and he was a freshman. We used to go to McDonald's together. I want to go and play in Marcus Mariota's shadow. I want to be the next Marcus Mariota. And Oregon kind of went, yeah, that's cool, but you know, that's not how we do things. Well, USC offered, Alabama offered, UCLA offered, Texas A&M offered. And Oregon went, yeah, it's not how we do things. We'll come after you eventually. Oregon didn't even offer until he'd already committed to Alabama. By then, he was the Elite 11 MVP. He was a potential five-star quarterback. It was obvious that he was going to be a superstar. But if they'd done the research, and I did, it's why I wrote about it when he was a sophomore in high school, I said, this kid's going to be the next superstar quarterback out of Hawaii. Oregon didn't like to do it. So in comes Willie Taggart. In comes Mario Cristobal. In comes Coach Hayward, Coach Arroyo. One, Coach Arroyo's connected in Texas. Two, Coach Williams and Coach Hayward are connected in California. Mario Cristobal is connected in the South, as was Willie Taggart, although he's moved on. And suddenly this staff was young. They were energetic. They knew how to recruit, and they knew how to sell Oregon. Oregon under Mark Helfrich started to figure out at the end of his tenure that they were doing it wrong. And they tried, again, they weren't genuine. They tried to sell flash and tried to sell, hey, we're Oregon, it's exciting. And they sent out these edits, and I got my hands on a couple of them, and I wrote an article in a column about it, and it said, walk like a duck, and they were just the lamest. It looked like a coach took a picture of a pair of Oregon Jordans with his iPhone and then wrote walk like a duck on the bottom. And it was just a terrible edit. It was embarrassing. And it was like, you know, forever, Oregon said, basically, we're too cool for edits. Well, Ohio State was doing edits. Alabama was doing edits. Oregon wouldn't do edits. They wouldn't touch them. We don't need to do edits. Then it was like, well, we'll do edits. And then it was like, who's on your staff putting these together? They're ridiculous. Oregon now has a graphics team. Oregon has a team who is designed to create graphics for kids. You see kids parachuting in Fortnite. Fortnite's a really popular video game. They have the recruits as characters in Fortnite parachuting in Autzen Stadium in the background. They have them in Black Panther costumes. I mean, their edit team is fantastic. Think of the change there. From we're too cool to do edits to we hired a staff to do this. And then Oregon's always been able to recruit skill position. They've always done a good job of identifying running backs, quarterbacks, tight ends, receivers, DBs. The one piece they were missing was O-line, D-line. And Mario Cristobal, and again, I don't know the author's name, and I need to look it up, but an author wrote an article about the fact that Alabama was doing some early scouting potentially to play Oregon in the national championship game. They ended up losing to Ohio State in the semifinals. But Mario Cristobal said, or maybe it's even Cristobal that's told the story, man, watching film, man, can you imagine if you had Oregon skill players and Alabama's O-line, D-line? Light bulb. Mario Cristobal, that's exactly what he's doing at Oregon. So you suddenly have a modern approach. They know how to market Oregon's excitement. And then Oregon's area of weakness, O-line, D-line recruiting, you just got a head coach who not only knows how to do it, but knows exactly where to go to find him. Mario Cristobal, National Recruiter of the Year 2 years ago, finished second another time. Suddenly bringing in O-line. And not only that, and this is the big piece people are missing because this recruiting class is loaded with good talent from California. It's the perfect time to go in and steal California talent. You want to go play for Clay Helton? Not me. Stanford, for a while there, was putting together top 10 recruiting classes, particularly along the O-line. I'm telling you, I talk to O-line guys a lot. They're really excited about Mario Cristobal. He not only is very dynamic, very personable, very genuine, but he also teaches high-level O-line play. And now suddenly Oregon's getting some of those guys Stanford used to get. And then Chip Kelly, people thought Chip Kelly's going to come in and just clean up at UCLA. These kids have short memories. UCLA, as of a week ago, had no four-star recruits. None. They were 10th or 11th in the Pac-12. They were behind Oregon State in recruiting. So Chip Kelly didn't sell the way he wanted to. Clay Helton, who wants to go play at USC for Clay Helton right now? That's a dead man walking. So Oregon swooped in with their connections with Coach Hayward, with their connections with Coach Dante Williams, who's really slept on in this whole thing. He was part of the reason Nebraska made a push at California before. So people say, how does Oregon have the number two recruiting class in the nation? The California schools are down. The California schools are down. That provided an opening. Why didn't Oregon do this before? Because they didn't have a staff that knew how to capitalize on Oregon's Jordan brand, Nike brand, tradition, the trophy room. They didn't have a staff that liked to do that. Is Oregon a contender for a national title right now? No. But they know how to promote themselves for the first time ever, and they're finally selling the value of a scholarship, a football scholarship at Oregon, on the recruiting trail to the value that it actually holds in the kids' eyes. They're excited about Oregon. I remember Oregon. I remember DeAnthony Thomas. I remember Marcus Mariota. I remember LaMichael James. That's what they're selling to these kids, on top of, hey, we have Jumpman Jordan uniforms. Hey, we've put multiple D linemen in the NFL. Eric Armstead, DeForest Buckner, first-round draft picks. Hey, Justin Herbert's here. I know we're not great right now, but we potentially have the number one pick in the NFL draft. All of that stuff sells. And if you humble yourself a little bit and go, this is what these kids want. It's not about coming to play for Oregon. We want you, and we will humble ourselves, and we will recruit you. Oregon made a mistake on the recruiting trail last year with a kid, and he was upset by it, considered decommitting. Mario Cristobal found out about it and had every single coach in the room call him and apologize. Every single coach, back to back to back to back to back, called and apologized. That comes across as genuine, and it comes across as being humble enough to pursue when you need to go do it. Forget that I'm a coach and you're an 18-year-old kid. I don't care. Forget I know more football than maybe you ever will. I need you. I want you. Come play in our cool uniforms. Come play and get some free shoes. That's legal. Jordan brand shoes. Come win. Look at our trophy room. We're going to shout you out on social media. We'll create some cool edits for you. Come be the next LaMichael. Come be the next Marcus. Come be the next DeForest. It's working. And it's working because there's an opening in California that Clay and Chip and right now David Shaw at Stanford cannot fill. Oregon is on fire on the recruiting trail, the nation's number two recruiting class. Only Alabama is better, folks. And guess where Mario Cristobal learned it? Alabama. The only person doing better, Nick Saban, the guy Cristobal learned how to recruit from. Last weekend, Oregon hosted a number of big-time recruits, including four-star defensive end Ty Robinson, 6'6", 285 pounds. The problem, I just mentioned, Alabama-Oregon going toe-to-toe. They're going toe-to-toe for Ty Robinson. He's out of Arizona, and he joins us next to talk about how his visit went to Oregon.
From five stars to unknown prospects, we cover them all. From Oregon Live, this is Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan.
The Oregon Ducks have the nation's number two recruiting class. We just spent the last segment explaining why that is. If there's any area that they still need to address and fix, it's the defensive line. Joining me now, one of their key targets, four-star defensive end Ty Robinson out of the state of Arizona, the nation's number 18 defensive end. Ty, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm doing really well. I want to jump right in. You visited Oregon here this past weekend. Simple question. What'd you think?
It was an amazing experience. Once in a lifetime, I'm truly blessed to go up there again for the second time to take an official visit up there.
What stands out with Oregon? We hear about the Jordan brand stuff. You know, Marcus Mariota won a Heisman. Dennis Dixon, Joey Harrington. That's all stuff locally people know. When you're a recruit, what is it about Oregon that appeals to you? What is it that stands out about the Ducks?
Definitely the family there and how they bring that culture there, and definitely their strength and conditioning program. It's definitely one of the best in the nation, I have to say, and one of the best I've been to throughout these visits.
At 6'6", 285 pounds, it doesn't seem like you'd need much more strength, man. I got to be honest. That seems like something you've checked that box, no?
Yeah, but there's always room for improvement. I definitely feel like I could get my body stronger and faster.
I'm just giving you a hard time. Oregon produced back-to-back first-round picks with Eric Armstead and DeForest Buckner along the defensive line. It was with the previous staff. How much does that matter? Is that a factor really at all in your recruitment?
In a way, it is. I just really want to go there. If I go there, then I just want to be developed the way I can be to the best of my ability and hopefully one day live those dreams and potentially be a first-round draft pick.
We're talking a four-star defensive end, Ty Robinson, a guy that I really strongly feel has a very, very bright future in college football wherever he chooses. One of the things I hear from recruits all the time when I talk to them is that there are multiple coaches at Oregon recruiting them seemingly at all times. There isn't just one guy. There's multiple. How many different Oregon coaches are recruiting you, and how different is that approach than other programs, or is that pretty much standard now in college football?
It's pretty standard. I have three right now. Definitely, I got Coach Joe Salavea, Coach Denenson, and Coach Cristobal all recruiting me.
How frequent in your experience is it for a head coach to be involved in recruitment, generally speaking? I mean, does that feel like it's pretty common when for you in your recruitment with the other schools that are recruiting you?
No, not at all. In fact, Oregon and Nebraska are really the only two that really have me in contact with their head coaches. Also with USC, I get on the phone with Coach Helen a few times a week.
There are certain schools, and it's just, it is what it is. There are certain schools in college football that when you get an offer from that school, everybody's ears kind of perk up. Michigan with DBs, linebackers at Penn State, and on the defensive side of the ball, and really anywhere, Alabama. What was it like, and how did you find out you got an offer from the Crimson Tide?
I was truly shocked. One day earlier this year, I was in my car and I got a text from one of the coaches there from Alabama, and I just started freaking out. I didn't know what to think. My heart was racing 1,000 miles per hour, and my head coach, I had just left the school, and my head coach told me to come back, and I called up Coach Lupoy from Alabama, and they decided to offer me.
How similar are Coach Lupoy and Coach Salavea in terms of their approach to recruiting? Do they feel similar, or are they very different?
They are very different. Coach Lupoy likes to take he's building a relationship with me just as well as Coach Salavea. But with him, it's good luck for every game. It's showing the stats, showing what it is to be like a part of the Crimson Tide. But with Coach Salavea, I get this more of a family feeling, who truly cares, and it's a genuine feeling, not just that fluff.
How much does that matter, that building of that relationship versus, I mean, Alabama? Maybe it's not the same level of depth to the relationship, but it also has its selling points. Obviously, the number of picks they've put in the NFL probably speaks for itself to some extent as well.
Right, but the part of building a relationship with that coach is very important to me because, you know, I'll be there for the next hopefully 4 to 5 years, maybe even three. Helping that relationship really can help the bond and to develop me even better and grow this relationship.
Talking to four-star defensive end Ty Robinson, 6'6", 285 pounds. I really do think he's going to have a very special future in college football. One of the schools you're considering is USC, and I don't mean to put you on the spot here, but USC has had some struggles right now, and there is some question about the future of their head coach. How much does that matter to you in terms of, you know, what's going on with a head coach, or is that really not part of the equation when you're looking at a college you potentially could commit to?
No, it's not really part of that equation. I really do feel like the coaching staff at USC can really get it turned around. They say to pick a school not because of the coaches, but because you can see yourself going there. And it's really hard to do that, but sometimes you just have to face the facts.
What's your timeline, and when do you plan on graduating? Could you be an early enrollee? Will that factor into your timeline as far as a commitment?
So my plan is to sign this December on early signing day, but not enroll early. Just kind of not get out of the way, but start building that relationship even further and starting to learn their playbook and start doing their strength and conditioning workouts just to get myself ready for those summer workouts and for the next season.
You've kept things relatively close to the vest in your recruitment. Where are you at right now? Top four, top five, top 10, still everybody's in the mix. How do you look at it?
I don't really have, it's hard to rank these schools because each school has a different thing to offer with each program, but I do have like my specific group. It's definitely Nebraska, Oregon, USC, Alabama, ASU, Florida, all those great schools that have really heavily recruited me have really been that kind of group.
Ty, I first saw your film quite a while ago, and I picked you out as a guy who I thought had a really bright future. I'm really excited to see that you have the scholarship opportunities that speak to your level of talent. I wish you the very best in making your decision. When you do make that decision, I'd love a chance to talk to you potentially on the show again. You did a great job. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
And again, one of the things I told you in that first segment, Oregon coaches come hard at you, three different coaches. And what's amazing is Cristobal is so involved, and the relationship is personal. And it may or may not work out for Ty Robinson. Oregon may or may not end up getting Ty Robinson. But that staff takes a personal approach to really get to know him on a different level, and you heard how much that mattered to him. That's another reason they've been so successful this year.
Look, he said he was giddy and he was jumping up and down and everything was great when he got the Alabama commitment, but then he said that his relationship with Tosh Lapoy is basically good luck in your game and here's the stats from your game, good job. Whereas his relationship with Joe Salavea is way more personal than that. And he referenced the strength and conditioning program like four times and he really wants that. So if you're an Oregon fan, that was a good interview for you to hear. Because he sounds like he's leaning, even if it's not anywhere close yet, it sounds like he's leaning Oregon at the moment.
And I think USC and Nebraska are doing a really good job here, too. I do think Alabama's probably that fourth school or the outlier there. I think probably it's USC, Nebraska in the lead, Oregon maybe third. The other big piece here is what else Oregon potentially has on tap along the D-line. If you've been paying attention, and I've written about this, and if you follow 24/7 Sports or Rivals or any other sites, you know predictions are flooding in right now for Kayvon Thibodeau, the nation's number one overall prospect, and they're all for Oregon. I mean, it is just an avalanche of predictions. I have not made a prediction with Kayvon Thibodeau for one big reason. Big-time recruits, five-star recruits, elite prospects like that can change on a dime. I've interviewed kids who have done an interview for me and said, hey, don't publish this until I announce my commitment. I'm going to announce in a couple days. I'm picking Oregon or I'm picking, you know, Oregon State or wherever. And we do a full interview. I have a full story with quotes from them on a school. And then when they announce, it's like, hey, I'm announcing on Twitter. And it's like, I better watch this video just to make sure before I hit send and publish. And sure enough, they picked a different school. Guys change all the time. And they tend to change the higher level the recruit. Because there's a lot more X factors that get involved. If I had to pick right now, if Kayvon Thibodeau said, I'm committing tonight, I'd say, yeah, he's going to Oregon. But he's not committing until mid-December. So that's another thing to watch. Oregon potentially takes two more D linemen. But if they get Kayvon Thibodeau, do they still go after Ty Robinson as hard? Do they look at other targets? Are they looking for Kayvon Thibodeau and one other player? Because they also hosted Stephen Wright, a fellow Adidas All-American, so who also liked his trip. So it'll be interesting to see how Oregon splices this out. But Oregon has the number two recruiting class in the nation and appears to be the heavy favorite to add the number one prospect in the entire country. What a time to be alive if you're an Oregon fan. Not quite the same level of success in basketball. They're doing well. If you've watched it all lately, you've seen Bol Bol, the unicorn that is Bol Bol. You know that Lou King's coming back.
Looking very awkward in his first game.
Dude, he's this awkward, productive wonder. It's very odd because I watched him a couple times, including at the Nike Hoop Summit, and he looked awkward, he looked lanky, and frankly out of sorts at times, and then you look up at the box score, and I think he had some, and I'm making up his points and rebounds, but he had like 14 points, 11 boards, and it should have been, all of Press Row agreed he had at least 7 blocks. I had 10, somebody else had 9, somebody had 8, and another person had 9, and they listed him at like 4 or 5 blocks in the Nike Hoop Summit. So if that's who you are, even if it's awkward and lanky and weird, but it's 14 points, 11 boards, 8 blocks, 7 blocks we'll take. That works, and you're happy with that. Oregon in the class of 2019 doing some really unique things. They landed a big-time prospect today. I will tell you about that next on Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan.
Game tapes to junior days to recruiting visits. This is where it happens. Recruiting with Andrew Nemec, featuring Oregon Live and Oregonian recruiting expert Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan.
During the break, Lynch and I kind of debated Bol Bol and whether or not he is...
Wasn't much of a debate.
It wasn't. We kind of agree whether or not he's going to live up to expectations. And people get so enamored with the fact that he's, you know, 7'3" and can do some things that guards can do. I mean, people saw that like fadeaway corner three at the buzzer in the exhibition game, and they get very excited. The problem is the NBA has guys like him that are maybe an inch or two shorter, and their names are Kevin Durant and Kristaps Porzingis. We've seen this body that can play like a guard, you know, Jokic, but they move really well. He moves still like a player who plays underwater. I mean, he's
he
good.
He moves like a tree. Not at all.
He's kind of like a blend of Kevin Durant
because trees don't move.
And Manute Bol. I was just going to move on. He moves like a tree. That's good. It's a good scouting report thing. He's kind of a blend of like Kevin Durant and his father.
And which sounds amazing.
Except he's more on the side of his father.
Which still sounds amazing. But
it's really fun to watch. It's really unique to watch.
I think
watch.
People, and I'm not going to pretend like I watched Manute Bol play because I didn't, but because it happened when I was young. But watching his highlights, it's like, oh, wow, he hit all these threes, and oh, wow, he's awkward. And he does not belong on the floor.
He's awkward.
And Bol Bol does not belong on the floor, yet he still produces. And watching the first game of the season, I was like, are you kidding me? This is Bol Bol?
I know. And that's what was so hard for me to talk about him as a recruit, because you'd ask people and they're like, listen, like, you can think he's awkward or whatever, but look at what happens. And when he cares, and that's the other thing, he's often not motivated. And that's not a secret. I mean, everybody and their grandma has written, if Bol Bol cares, he could be really good. And we saw him care at the Nike Hoop Summit, an event that I've seen guys who are very good, future lottery picks, play and have like 6 points, 4 boards, and they're good. And he had like 14, 11, and 7 blocks. So he was very productive, and yet it just doesn't look right. And I just wonder sometimes if that's the eye test. I don't think that Bol Bol is as much a slam dunk to be a one and done as people think, because I think his transition to the NBA could be complicated because of what you said. His lateral quickness isn't great. His positioning in the post isn't good when he's motivated to be in the post. Listen, great get for Dana Altman. Fantastic. It's going to do massive things for them in recruiting. Once you get a potential top 5 player in the country and you beat a Kentucky or a Duke for a player, it opens the door for you to get more of them. But I think he might come back unless he's just dead set on it. And that's, you know, no matter what, I'm one of those. His game speaks to a guy who is, particularly in the post, really needs refinement.
And it's not just in the post. It's everywhere. Because they...
Man, you are just dogging this kid out. No, you're right, though.
But seriously...
I'm just giving you a hard time. You're right.
Because I had not seen him play.
Okay.
I had heard the buzz. I had heard, oh, Bol Bol's going to pick Oregon. It's amazing that they got him. And I heard you talk about him at the Nike Hoop Summit. I listened to that game, and I was, like, listening to it and trying to gauge it based on the radio. And then I watched him play Portland State, and they're like, oh, he can handle the ball. And he brings the ball up the court, and like, yes, he can dribble. Good job. And then he throws the ball away into the stands on a bad pass.
Yeah.
And then he bricks like 4 straight threes, and he gets blocked by a 6'4" guard, and he's in awful position on defense frequently.
Yes.
And
that has to do with a lack of effort.
Right. Well, because it could be that also a lack of true basketball knowledge, which you talked about a little bit earlier, but
right.
I mean, that'll improve, but you don't normally see one and done kids who are surefire NBA players struggle like this. Watching Duke play and seeing how RJ Barrett and Cam Reddish and Zion Williamson did, and you're like, wow, they're going 1, 2, 3 in the draft.
You don't often see a kid who's supposed to be a lottery pick, and your first thought is, man, that's awkward. And that is seemingly everyone's initial takeaway with Bol Bol is that looks awkward. He may come back. The other piece is Luke King, another 5-star player, will be back for Pac-12 play. He is still recovering from a knee injury. Luke King, to me, will be that guy that Luke King took his stock from high 4-star to mid-tier 5-star. I mean, Luke King had a monster senior season, and Luke King had the same problems. As a junior, he averaged like 14 points and 5 rebounds. People were like, this kid should kill everybody. What's going on? And it was like, hey, man, if you really want to take this seriously, you're going to have to crank it up a notch. And he did, and people went, whoa, this kid is special. Luke King might be more along the lines of that 5-star that you get excited about. So what has Oregon done as an encore is kind of the question. In the class of 2019, right now, the answer is not much, and yet they've gotten 3 commitments. It's just been a really weird collection of 3 commitments. They start out getting Francis Okoro, who is on the team now, if you pay attention. Top 60 recruit in the class of 2019. Big-time prospect. I mean, a high-level 4-star recruit. But he reclassifies, graduates early, and ends up at Oregon. So a potential headliner of the class is removed. That's important to note here. Then they go and get a JC player. And here's the thing. If you're one of those programs that's consistently a one-and-done, it is very rare that your first commitment is a JC player. Kentucky, Duke, North Carolina, Villanova, Indiana, Michigan State. You don't often hear, yeah, but man, they sure got a great JC prospect. It just doesn't happen very often. It's a sign that Oregon probably isn't going to have the same result in basketball recruiting this year as they did last year. And then if you want further evidence of that, you have their commitment today, which I like. I just don't know if I care until the year 2021. Isaac Johnson is a 6'10", 6'11" big man. Again, right in that Francis Okoro range. Top 60 player in the country. Chooses Oregon over BYU, Kansas State, Utah. Talented kid. The problem is that he's going on a Mormon mission for 2 years. So Mike Lynch, his commitment's not binding even if he signs, because he'll be gone long enough that the lock-in to Oregon is no longer extended. Do you care? And if he's on a mission, doesn't it seem likely that BYU and Utah will be more likely to be in his ear where he comes back and potentially goes somewhere else?
Do I care? Not really, because if that's your religion and that's what you want to do and that's part of, you know, becoming a man or whatever the case is, then do it. Go for it. I'm not going to judge you for that.
No issue there for me either, by the way. That's not my point.
I don't mind. But yeah, you're right. If he goes, you bet it's going to be mostly BYU fans and or students, or I guess Utah too, but mostly BYU, who are going to be there. And they're going to talk Cougar basketball. And then he's going to go, wait, why did I choose Oregon over BYU, which is the school that is of my faith? And all my friends are going to go to BYU. And yeah, I could for sure see that changing. And the fact that they were one of the final teams he was thinking about picking also kind of puts that into light.
And he's from Utah. I mean, I think this is a nice commitment for Oregon. If he ends up playing there, great. I just think we need to pump the brakes on Oregon's 2019 recruiting class. They got Francis Okoro, nice addition. He ended up in 2018, which made it an even better recruiting class. That class is insanely talented and insanely deep. And then this year, their first guy's a JC kid, Chris Duarte, who potentially, by the way, is the number one JC player in the country. I mean, he's very good. I'm not trying to take that away from him. He will come in and be talented. But if you want to battle the one and dones, if you're the next team that's going to battle for the Bol Bols and the Lou Kings and the RJ, you know, Oregon finished in the top 3 for RJ Barrett. They almost got RJ Barrett. There were people predicting Oregon would get RJ Barrett in the final 24 hours before he committed. They were wrong. But Oregon was very much in the mix. If you're that program, you're not taking a JC kid as your first commitment. You're going after 5-star. They're still in it for a couple of big names. Cassius Stanley just tweeted just before the show that he's about ready to commit, and he posted 2 photos, and they're both him in an Oregon uniform. By the way, I believe it was Adam Zagoria. I hope that's right. He does a phenomenal job on Zag's blog. If he doesn't, he's worth following if it was somebody else. But Somebody reported that Oregon is visiting with an in-home visit for Cassius Stanley on Saturday. Cassius Stanley is an ESPN five-star recruit on 24/7 and Rivals. He misses being a five-star by like three spots. So he's a borderline five-star prospect. Cassius Stanley, a shooting guard, small forward. Kansas and UCLA are his other two. And then Oregon is in the top six now for Cole Anthony, the number two prospect in the entire country, Greg Anthony's son. I think it's probably going to be North Carolina, but Oregon's in the top six. So Cassius Stanley's the one to watch. That could come in very shortly. That could potentially come in this week, and that's a big-time get. Not quite as highly rated as Liu King, not as close to the hype as Bol Bol, but a nice addition. Oregon's 2019 class, sorry, it's going to be a good group. It is not going to be as good as the 2018 group. Basketball, man. I cannot believe we're in the heart of basketball season.
Well, we're not in the heart. We're in the start. It literally just started on Tuesday.
Well, we're talking about it. It's like a discussion thing now.
I know. I'm just.
The Blazers, people are already talking.
I'm just messing with you.
The Blazers, people are already talking about them having proven that they're much better than they were.
They have, actually.
That they're a real. So that's heart-ish.
Yeah.
That's in the lungs of basketball season.
Maybe in the throat.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. We'll have more for you on Recruiting with Andrew Nemec.
Let's wait until January.
Next.
From five stars to unknown prospects, we cover them all. From Oregon Live, this is Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan.
So often, we stick to recruiting. And lately, we've done a little bit of Oregon high school football. And I got to get to what happened this week or what we learned about this week at the OSAA. I've had a problem with the OSAA this season, and specifically their brackets and their rankings. They are too slavish to their numbers. And, you know, you look at the 6A level and people say, well, it doesn't matter. Well, it does. It matters. I mean, Lake Oswego was the number one seed with a loss. Clackamas was the number two seed. They were undefeated, and they beat Lake Oswego, the number one seed, by 10 points earlier in the year. Can you imagine in college football if right now the new rankings had LSU ahead of Alabama? Because why not? It's a problem. And it's something they need to fix, and it's something they need to fix quickly, because this year, it actually cost the team a playoff bid. At the 3A level, Yamhill Carlton, who has not been to the postseason in more than a decade, found out when the bracket came out. They were right on the bubble. They won three straight to end the year to finish 5-4. Found out they just missed. They were the 16 seed, but because they didn't finish as the highest team for an at-large bid, they were left off. So, hand in your uniforms, into the season, team meeting, great season, guys, winning record to our six seniors, congratulations. That was on October 27th. On October 31st, the OSAA discovered that a forfeit for another team was entered in as an on-field victory. And because of that, that team got in ahead of Yamhill Carlton. When they put it in as a forfeit, Yamhill Carlton got its first postseason appearance in more than a decade. So they sat on it for a day, which I honestly don't have the biggest problem with in the world, because it was a disaster and they had to figure out, did it affect anything else? By the time they were sure that that was the only issue, they went to the school and met with the principal, the athletic director, and the head coach, Brennan Mossholder, who did an interview with me on the Andrew Nemec Recruiting Podcast this week to talk about his team and listed his seniors and had a chance to kind of shout out his team and talk about this whole thing. And they said, listen, and everyone agreed, the game would be in 2 days. And you haven't practiced, you haven't seen film, we've handed in our uniforms, the team's over, we're not going to change it. So Yamhill Carlton handles it without major controversy, but the parents and some of the players are pissed. And they released the letter the OSAA sent. The only thing that the principal, the athletic director, and the head coach said was, you need to write a letter to our community and explain what happened here. So the OSA explained it. And to the OSA's credit, they found out there was an error, and instead of sitting on it, they reported it. And they self-reported it, and they went and met face-to-face with the school that was affected. But if you do what I say and have a committee of three look at the bracket at the end, and if all three people on the committee say, hey, there's some common sense issues with this bracket, we need to flip Clackamas and Laco because Clackamas beat Laco head-to-head. Laco has a loss. Clackamas is undefeated. Laco's the one. Clackamas is the two. Let's flip that. And the entire committee of three votes unanimously that they agree with the flip, and they write a letter explaining bullet point A, B, C for all the changes they made, that this wouldn't have happened. And it is time for a change with the OSAA, which is a governing body that does what the athletic directors in the state of Oregon asked them to do. The Oregon high school athletic directors need to demand a change, and the OSAA needs to enact a change that fixes this, because this is ridiculous.
Yeah, I've seen you on Twitter about this a little bit throughout the season, and I know you posted an article on it on the Oregonian, but for me, this is not something I've ever fully paid attention to. I think I like the idea of having the ranking system. When I first moved here and was kind of keeping an eye on high school football, I thought it was cool that there was the computer rankings and that's how you kind of made stuff up. I know there's flaws to it, but I just thought it was interesting.
I think they should keep it. I think the system, generally speaking, does a good job. It does not, admittedly, committee, the OSA has admitted this, it does not take into account head-to-head results, which would be an immediate fix. Just if a team is one behind another team and they beat them head-to-head, you can flip them.
Right. And I remember looking at it this year, and it's been a couple of years since I've been doing high school football back in the studio and kind of following all this stuff. And I remember looking at it and going, I think it was Lake Ridge. And I went, why is Lake Ridge ranked there? And because there was another team that only had, there was a like a 5-4 record or something that was ranked really high. And then there was a team that was 7-2 that was ranked really low. And I think one of those might have been a PIL thing. So I guess in some sense, I understand that. But it was just weird. I thought the rankings were weird. And yeah, a committee of three could certainly help fix some of those weird parts of it.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. We got a Duck game tomorrow night. So the high school, the Bi-Mart game of the week is Preston and I on the call because Swag's in Hawaii. And it pregame show starts at 6:30 on 910.
I think so. I'm doing the Duck game, so I'm not doing high school football tomorrow.
9:10, Bi-Mart game of the week, Tualatin at Central Catholic. I've talked about teams that are most likely to win the state title, and I think there are eight teams that got a shot. There are four kind of co-favorites, and then there are four teams that are right there. Tualatin and Central Catholic are both in that. That should be a fantastic football game. Tune in at 6:30. We will also have scores after the show on the Les Schwab Tires post-game scoreboard show. Thank you, as always, for listening.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.